Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
A lot of times I believe that these meaningful conversations really allow soldiers to process through issues before they kind of bubble up.
Army officials in Alaska say recent efforts to provide mental health services are making a difference. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, July 3rd. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, a new agency works to relieve Alaska's housing shortage.
For the state of Alaska, it's causing really hardship for recruiting and workforce, and also a lot of families are leaving the state.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
You know that eating fruits and vegetables supports good health, but did you also know that frozen and canned produce offers the same health benefits as fresh? It's true. Whether fresh, frozen, canned, or from the land, eating fruits and veggies can lead to a long and healthy life. So when it comes to getting the fruits and veggies you need to stay healthy, remember, every bite counts. This message sponsored by Snap.
Anchorage police say an officer shot and killed an armed man early Sunday on a Glen Highway exit ramp. Police say two officers responding to a shots fired call just after 5:30 a.m. Sunday found an SUV pulled over on the outbound off-ramp at South Birchwood. A man was standing outside with a rifle in his hands. Police Chief Michael Curl at a news conference hours later told reporters what happened next.
The suspect advanced on the officers while holding the rifle. One officer fired his weapon, hitting the suspect at least one time in the upper chest.
Police identified the man as 34-year-old Sean Burke. A police spokeswoman said today that Burke did not fire at officers. Police also say it's unclear if he was connected to the initial reports of shots fired in the area. Medics treated Burke at the scene and took him to a local hospital where he died soon after. Police say they also found a handgun on him. Burke's death is under investigation by the State Office of Special Prosecutions, as well as the Anchorage Police Department, to determine whether his shooting violated any police policies. Two people died in a plane crash Sunday afternoon on the southeast side of Kodiak Island. A Coast Guard spokesperson said Sunday that 5 people were aboard the Piper Cherokee when it went down about 3 miles north of the village of Old Harbor. 3 survivors were found at the crash site. One passenger was reported to be in critical condition and was transported by a helicopter to Providence Kodiak Island Medical Center. 2 other passengers who were injured but in stable condition were transported by a Good Samaritan Cessna crew to awaiting medical personnel. Alaska State Troopers also assisted in the call. Watchstanders from Coast Guard Sector Anchorage received the call at approximately 3:30 p.m. The plane was operated by Kodiak-based Vertigo Air. The company declined to comment when reached by phone this morning. The cause of the crash is under investigation. The military in Alaska has long struggled with high rates of suicide, even higher than Alaska's already high statewide average. But a year and a half ago, one Army division started a program to combat the crisis. And as Alaska Public Media's Rachel Cassandra reports, it seems to be helping.
Infantryman Robert Waddle's mental health was declining early this year while he was stationed in Fairbanks.
The situations I had been encountering inside of my unit had greatly impacted my mental health. I would definitely say I was in a crisis state.
Waddle was not the only service member struggling. People serving in the military here face all the typical stressors of Alaska life, like short winter days and geographic isolation, and they often don't have a strong support system nearby. The rate of suicide in the military and the state peaked in 2021 when 17 soldiers took their own lives. It was a wake-up call. And the Army's 11th Airborne Division at Fort Wainwright decided to create a program called Mission 100 in response. Chaplain Colonel Masaki Nakazono is the command chaplain for the division.
We realize that connectedness is critical to the health and well-being of our soldiers.
It's now a year and a half into the Mission 100 program. And Nakasono and others say it seems to be paying off, although there's still work to be done. Nakasono says all soldiers must now see a professional for a wellness visit once in their first 6 months, and then once a year after that. And team leaders also call a soldier's family members to introduce themselves.
Because a lot of times it's a family member who understands when their soldier is in trouble and is struggling. And they really don't understand the military system or even how to contact a unit or a leader.
The program has brought more chaplains and counselors to Alaska. Nakasono says this has led to shorter wait times for counseling and a 95% reduction in soldiers experiencing an immediate crisis. Suicide rates are also down, but the numbers are so small it's hard to draw conclusions just yet. Halfway through the year, there's been one suspected suicide. The total was 6 last year, down from the high of 17, yet similar to years before the spike. Nakasono says that one key piece is that chaplains are available after hours and on the weekend around Army barracks, when talks won't interfere with work. He thinks these casual conversations help catch problems earlier.
And a lot of times I believe that these meaningful conversations really allow soldiers to process through issues before they kind of bubble up and get to a point where they're alone, disconnected, and have no one to really talk to.
Monique Andrews is a therapist in Anchorage, and she's in the Alaska Army National Guard. She sees many soldiers in her practice, but she's not associated with Mission 100. She described the program as a brilliant approach to reduce the stigma tied to seeking mental health care.
If every single person has to connect and talk, then there isn't this us versus them. You know, a general is going to talk to a mental health provider. A private is going to talk to a mental health provider.
Andrews isn't speaking as a representative of the military, which she says is wrestling with its long history of stigmatizing mental health care.
Back in the day, if you went to mental health, your career was over. That's no longer the case, but there is some truth and validity with every stigma.
Andrews says she sees a lot of patients in the military struggling with isolation and loneliness. Last month, the Surgeon General labeled loneliness in America an epidemic. Its toll on health and mental health is twice as harmful as obesity. Waddle, the infantryman stationed in Fairbanks, says he struggled with feeling alone. He saw a chaplain who came up to the division as part of Mission 100, and he says their discussions helped him learn to reframe his relationships.
I had constantly been feeling really ostracized or alone, and after having someone that I could connect with, it's hard to describe. It had been nice to feel connection with a person for the first time in a long time.
He began seeing the chaplain regularly, sometimes as often as once a day. He says it was easier to open up because the chaplain is also in the military and has been deployed. But Waddle says getting help wasn't perfectly smooth. He got pushback from peers and was reprimanded by a supervisor for being late when the session ran over, even though he had a written excuse.
And when that happened, it honestly made it really hard for me to want to continue going because I felt like I was going to get reprimanded or in trouble for trying to seek help.
But he did continue to see the chaplain, and it continued to help. He considers his mental health a work in progress, but no longer a crisis. And now he tells his peers about the value of his visits with the chaplain. He thinks that's helping nudge military culture around mental health in the right direction. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a local food program aims to improve food security in Kodiak.
He is just feeding the local communities first and foremost year-round. So that's why the hydroponics has been a game changer.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Quality childcare creates futures for families, children, and the state's economy. When children are safe, engaged, and learning, parents can work and everyone has a better outcome. THREAD has resources to support your family in their childcare search. Knowing what to look for in a licensed facility is important for the safety of your children. THREAD also offers parenting resources and support. To learn more about quality childcare in Alaska, visit threadalaska.org. This message sponsored by THREAD.
A new housing agency has rolled out its first round of grants to kickstart the construction of about 80 new homes across the state. Housing Alaskans, a public-private partnership known as HAP, was formed to ease Alaska's severe housing shortage. It puts its money where the need is great. So far, it's funding homes for seniors, low to middle income families, survivors of domestic violence, and those in need of supportive housing. But as KNBA's Rhonda McBride tells us, HAP's mission is bigger than just building homes.
With $4 million in requests, the $750,000 in grants that HAP gave out is really just a drop in the bucket. But it's what HAP calls the first in a series of strategic investments.
It was expensive to build up here before, but it's really expensive now. So most of the homes being built by developers are higher-end homes.
Preston Simmons, who chairs the board for HAP, says the housing shortage hurts not just those who need a place to live, but the entire state.
For the state of Alaska, it's causing really hardship for recruiting and workforce. And also a lot of families are leaving the state just because of cost and affordability of homes.
A big problem, Preston Simmons says, especially for communities with tourism, is the high number of rentals converted to Airbnbs or short-term rentals. Michelle French, RuralCAP's director of rural housing, says that trend has hit Soldotna hard because there's no longer incentive for landlords to rent to low and middle income families.
They can make quite a lot of money in a very short period of time. And so it's taking all of those homes off of the long-term rental market, and it's making it very difficult for families to be able to find long-term rentals or if they're looking to become homeowners.
HAP's funding comes just in time to help RuralCAP finish a self-help housing project for 9 families in Soldotna, which saw the pandemic drive up costs with delays and price hikes for building materials. In this project, families supply about 65% of the labor to build their homes and get low-interest loans to pay off the rest. Faith Tulick from Hooper Bay, a community on the Bering Sea coast, knows firsthand how important RuralCAP's self-help program is. She got involved in an earlier RuralCAP project after she had moved to the Kenai Peninsula to finish her schooling, but then decided against moving back home.
There'd be no way we could get our own place out there.
Tulick says the only option for her husband and 2 children would have been to move into her mother's home.
So like my mom, my sister and her kids and my brother and their sisters, some might have like smaller homes with just about the same amount of people.
Faith Tulick says it's typical for families in Hooper Bay to double up, even triple up in their homes, often with about 10 people to a household. She says she wishes that there could be a self-help housing project for Hooper Bay. Perhaps someday, if HAP accomplishes all that it hopes to do. Preston Simmons says HAP wants to work with other nonprofits to find creative solutions to Alaska's housing shortage.
Alaskans have a lot of great ideas and work really hard, but there are so many different organizations, they often work in different silos. If you can create a coordinating entity that kind of connects those dots, you can get a lot done.
At the top of Simmons' list, to find ways to cut down on the cost of supplies, especially to rural Alaska, where the cost of housing averages about $9 per square foot, about 3 times more than in urban areas. Another problem for rural Alaska, the age of homes. Most were built in the 1970s and 80s and will require not only the materials, but code changes to get the grants to help fund the repairs. Michelle French says changing the rules is hard to do for agencies like hers with limited resources.
Sometimes it's a very long process and people will start and then give up.
French hopes HAP can succeed where others have failed. Simmons says housing is an investment worth making because it's key to solving many of Alaska's other problems, from health to homelessness to boosting the economy, and yes, key in the pursuit of happiness. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
A local food hub has sprouted on Kodiak Island. The archipelago is now home to 5 community and tribally owned farms, with plans for a 6th agricultural site this summer. The farming network is still mid-bloom, but the idea is to eventually connect Kodiak through locally grown food. And as KMXT's Kirsten Dobroth reports, the island could be a model of food security for other parts of rural Alaska.
You might not realize that a full-fledged farm has popped up just outside downtown Kodiak, even if you walked right by it.
Right now, it's really lettuce and various herbs.
Max Lyons is the project and marketing coordinator for the Kodiak Archipelago Leadership Institute. He's standing in an L-shaped set of turquoise Connex buildings called Malik Farms. They sit in a parking lot outside the native village of Afognak's administrative offices. The buildings are small, each measuring just about 40 feet long, but nearly 2,000 plants can grow here in hydroponic cabinets. Each baby lettuce head looks like it bloomed from a bright white shelf filled with water.
He is just feeding the local communities first and foremost, year round. So that's why the hydroponics has been a game changer, because all year you can have, you know, fresh greens at least.
Malik is co-owned by Afognak and the native village of Dinicnak, which is the tribe on Woody Island, right across the channel from Kodiak. Right now, anyone in town can sign up for weekly fresh bags of greens and, depending on availability, have them delivered to their front doors. Tribal elders get first priority. Malik currently serves about 100 households a week. It's a lot of work. Becky Gomez is the hydroponic trainee at Malik Farms.
Monday is usually prepping for harvest, which is Tuesday. Wednesday, we're prepping for deliveries, and then we set out for deliveries, usually about a couple of hours per afternoon. And then Thursday is the same thing again, and then just planning ahead for the following week.
Malik is just the newest farm on the island. There are 5 farms total across the archipelago that make up the Aleutic-grown network. And new hydroponic growing units are being built in the village of Akiak this summer. Almost all of the island's food is brought in from somewhere else. Lyon says the ultimate goal of the farming network is to change that.
Once the villages are producing more than they can consume, they'll send it into Kodiak. So that's where we have that outlet of the food hub.
Eventually, excess produce will be shipped out to other parts of the island as part of the Kiktuk food hub. Kiktuk means Kodiak Island in Aleutic. The project started back in 2015 and was seeded with federal grants. The farms are all community or tribally owned and slightly different. Joe Kewin is the agricultural specialist for the native village of Port Lyons on the northeast corner of the island. He started working on the Port Lyons farm back in 2016.
There's cauliflower, broccoli. We pretty much grow any types of vegetables. This year, I'm experimenting with asparagus and artichokes.
Kewin manages 2 acres in Port Lyons, including hoop houses and a chicken coop with 60 hens for laying eggs. He's even planting fruit trees this year.
I'm kind of new to fruit trees, so I'm still learning how to tend them and grow them. But we have a couple apple trees here as well.
There's also 3 Connex buildings where lettuce and greens grow hydroponically, just like in Kodiak. Residents can pick up whatever's ready to harvest from a farmer's market twice a week. Port Lyons was established as a home for people displaced when the tsunami and earthquake destroyed the native village of Afognak back in 1964. Kewin says those roots helped spark the idea for the farms and food hub.
Back in the Afognak village, there used to be farms and gardens. And so why don't we have farms around this island and in the villages for food security?
But Kewin, who was born and raised in Port Lyons, says the whole thing also goes beyond food security. The farm has given him a reason to stay there. He's hoping it does the same for others.
We want to keep this village going as long as we can. And I see that with this farm. I see this farm expanding as it gets bigger. Our tribe has plans to open a store again and get a store over here for our people.
Back in Kodiak, Lyon says they're still scaling up so they can feed more people each week. It's going to take some time, but he's excited to watch it grow. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Northern Air Cargo, providing year-round transportation of all types of freight from oversized equipment to small packages for commercial or residential. Northern Air Cargo, serving Alaska since 1956.
And by
ConocoPhillips Alaska, building the next generation of Alaska's workforce through investments in education and vocational training to provide jobs right here at home. ConocoPhillips Alaska. The IBEW is the union of skilled hands and generous hearts, hardworking people on the job and off. It's the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, the IBEW. This message sponsored by the IBEW Local 1547.
In the summer, tens of thousands of Pacific walruses gather along Alaska's beaches, and one of the biggest haulouts is on an island in Bristol Bay. It's also a traditional hunting site where Yupik people have harvested walrus for thousands of years. KDLG's Izzy Ross visited the island last year and talked to a few of Bristol Bay's walrus hunters about the importance of their hunts.
Round Island is 30 miles from Togiak in the Bering Sea. The island's Yupik name is Kayasik, which means a place to kayak. It's home to an abundance of wildlife, from nesting seabirds to foxes to stellar sea lions. Starting in the spring, thousands of walruses come to crowd the beaches and waters. One June morning, several males lie on a large flat rock in the sun, occasionally scratching and fanning out their flippers. Others swim in the waters nearby. State biologists have kept daily records of the summer walrus haulouts here since the 1970s. One of those biologists is Amber Stevens, who spends months on the island every year monitoring the herd.
This is obviously critical habitat for the male walrus because we only have male walrus that come here. The females stay with the ice, with the calves, and they follow the ice upwards and north as long as they can.
When males gather, you can sometimes hear them chiming, a sound when they let the air out of a sac above their necks. Stevens says males use that sound during the mating season to woo females. But on this boys-only island, the chiming is practice for the real thing. Kayasik is a traditional hunting site where native people have harvested walrus for thousands of years. But the recent history of hunting on the island is fraught. In the 1800s, commercial hunting in the Arctic, especially by Yankee whalers, drastically reduced the walrus population. The federal government later outlawed commercial hunting, but ongoing concerns about habitat led the Alaska State Legislature to create a game sanctuary near Togiak in 1960. The state banned hunting in most of the sanctuary, including Kayasik. But there was no consideration for traditional harvest practices, and Native people couldn't access their hunting grounds for over 30 years. Finally, after years of work, tribal leaders from Togiak successfully advocated for the state to reopen a subsistence hunt in 1995. Local representatives on Kayasik Walrus Commission, along with state and federal agencies, co-manage a fall hunt every year.
You could notice when people are getting restless. When is that walrus hunt going to be happening?
Peter Lockuck Sr. is a Togiak Tribal Council member and a hunt captain. He says an important part of walrus hunting is sharing food with the community.
After a successful hunt, we help each other and cut it up into smaller pieces so we could distribute it first of all to the elders and to the folks that can no longer hunt.
Walrus hunts require a lot of organization. Lockuck says they have to plan who will shoot, who will provide the boats, and who will drive ahead of time. A lot also depends on the weather. Daryl Thompson has participated in Togiak's community walrus hunts on and off for years. To get to Kayasik requires a long boat ride across open water.
You got to have a really calm wind because it could be pretty calm when you leave the village up here protected length of the shore. But once you leave Summit Island out there, it's open ocean. And if it was blowing last week farther out to sea, it's still going to have big waves out there. So you got to watch your weather real close out there.
Thompson says hunting from boats in the open water is more dangerous, and there's a bigger risk of losing the harvest because the walrus can sink. It's easier to hunt on beaches, where they can choose which animals to harvest, and Kayasik's rocky beaches are especially good for butchering, because there's no sand to spoil the meat.
when they're on the land, you can walk up point blank until that's the one and you put them down. It's a little bit more adventurous when they're all in the water. Mm-hmm. Then you got to take your boat and get up and get the good shot, and then you got to harpoon them. Because with the harpoon, you keep them from sinking and you can retrieve the animal. And that's a little bit different hunting technique doing that.
Teaching younger people is also central to walrus hunting. The costs of gas and equipment mean it's become more expensive to go out. At a recent Cuyahsic Walrus Commission meeting, representatives talked about organizing a joint hunt between Bristol Bay communities. At 27 years old, David Williams of Equawk is the youngest member of the commission.
So if we could get 20 hunters within the region as one joint hunt and get 20 walrus for all of our communities, I think that would definitely help everybody here, especially the elderly.
Williams says people from his village crave these traditional foods.
Personally, I would love to get my very first walrus and provide my community with my very first walrus.
This fall, hunters hope to gather a crew and go out again to teach new hunters and share with their communities. From Cuyahsic, I'm Izzy Ross.
This story was made possible through a field reporting grant from the Institute for Journalism and Natural Resources. Many Alaskans are marking America's founding with 4th of July events across the state. Here's a look at what's going on. In Anchorage, the city's 4th of July downtown parade is set to start at 11 a.m. tomorrow with an all-day celebration on the Delaney Park Strip. There will also be a baseball game between the Anchorage Glacier Pilots and the Anchorage Bucks starting at 7 p.m. Wasilla will host its own 11 a.m. parade tomorrow with the mayor's picnic at the local Idita Park at 1:30 p.m., Farther north along the Glen Highway in Sutton, the Glacier View car launch is set to take place at 9 a.m. tomorrow. And on the Kenai Peninsula, midnight fireworks in Seward will lead into tomorrow's grueling Mount Marathon race up and down the peak towering over town. Fairbanks will mark its 34th annual 4th of July celebration from noon to 8 p.m. tomorrow at Pioneer Park, or Alaskaland, as some of us still call it. Events will include a formal ceremony, a children's parade, live music, and more. And in Juneau, fireworks over Gastineau Channel start at 11:59 p.m. tonight. The Juneau Parade is at 11 a.m. tomorrow, followed by a matching parade in Douglas and numerous events at Douglas's Sandy Beach. And a reminder, the use of fireworks, sparklers, and bottle rockets are illegal in the municipality of Anchorage. That's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. We had reports tonight from Chris Clint, Rachel Cassandra, and Rhonda McBride in Anchorage, Kristen Dobrath on Kodiak Island, and Izzy Ross on Cuyahsic or Round Island. If you want to send us a news tip, question, or comment, email us at news@alaskapublic.org. Our audio engineer is Chris Hyde. Tim Rocky is our producer. Big thanks to Wesley Early for filling in last week. I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. Would you like to play a part in the public media you enjoy? Consider becoming a member or corporate sponsor. Contact your public radio station to learn how. From one end of Alaska to the other and everywhere in between, public media works to provide quality programming and statewide news you can count on and news you can trust. Whether you're listening at home, at work, or in the car, we're grateful to be a part of your day. Thank you for tuning in. This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.